Welcome to CAMS Cops Our Stories, the podcast series that delves into the unseen world of policing. In this episode, we're joined by Tom Wilby from the Forces Demand Hub, who discusses what it's like to be the first person to speak to someone in an emergency who needs police support. Tom talks about the types of emergency calls the force receives and the role he plays in protecting people from harm and ensuring they have the help they need.
Welcome, Tom. Can you introduce yourself a little bit?
My name's Tom. I'm a call handler within the Demand Hub. I've been doing the job for 4 years. Got some challenges, as I'm sure we'll go through and discuss today. But it's a really good job. Very busy environment, if that's what people are looking to do. So, yeah.
So you've obviously been doing it for 4 years now, but going right back to the very start, can you remember your first call and can you remember how you were feeling when you took that first call?
My first switchboard call was horrible because I probably was not even saying Cambridgeshire Police. I was probably still thinking I was in my old workplace, which is always have to stop yourself. I guess like the amount of information I've started doing switchboard training with new starters inductees and the amount of knowledge that obviously over 4 years I have inside my head of a policing environment is so much greater than it was when I started. When you start, you're just so focused on ticking all the boxes, making sure everything is correct and you're saying everything right. Over time, you can sort of preempt what people are going to be reporting. Obviously, a lot of calls are very similar. And we can start probing the caller, asking them questions, and fully risk assessing what we need to do.
So now, do you ever find yourself at a loss of what to say, what to do, or are you kind of trained in every sort of avenue that the call might go down?
Yeah, I mean, we're not trained in everything, but the training we do receive is essentially we're professional risk assessors. That's our job. Something I'll chat about a bit later, I'm sure, is Thrive. So our threat, harm, risk assessment, that's a core part of our job. And as I said, as a new person, a switchboard for the first time, they are going to be applying that, but they might not necessarily fully understand what it means. When you're experienced and once you've done your, what we call white line training, which is 999 and 101 non-emergency training, once you've done that training, which lasts, I think, about 10 to 12 weeks, so it's very like intense crash course into place it on the phone, essentially. Once you've done that, then weeks that's spent, you know, looking at the system, understanding the systems we use, but also applying our crime knowledge, our risk assessment, probing questions, things that we do all the time in life anyway, but just trying to put it into one sort of area, which is the policing, the crime aspect, and safeguarding, risk assessments, mm-hmm. that type of thing. So we're assessing what's the threat. You know, someone's got a knife, that's the threat. What's the harm of this? They're gonna get stabbed, mm-hmm. so you know, physical injury. And what's the risk of this, the likelihood it's gonna happen? Is that person stood next to you? Or are they behind a locked door? Mm-hmm. So it's just understanding that risk and having them questions. Obviously it's call control, but that doesn't come overnight. That happens with experience. You've got to be assertive enough and robust enough to push back at people. Sometimes it might sound, from an outside perspective, perhaps that you're shouting at people, but you're not. You're just trying, you know, they're in their moment of panic. Mm-hmm. When someone calls 999, it's generally not to say what time the shop's open. It can be, sadly, but in general, this person's in a panic. They're running a crisis. And they want someone there to support them on the phone and help them. So you've got to be that person that's just there to support them and assess what is being reported and then get them the best help that's possible if it's not for us, we can have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a member of public will call us and they just assume that we're doing everything. They think, for all intents and purposes, they think we're a police officer. We're not police officers. Most of us aren't. We will put that information on the system. And as we're putting that information on the system, if we've identified that it's something we need to go to now and immediate, upstairs switch dispatchers straight away are getting hold of officers. We need to go to this. So as we're typing, they're loading that information. It's not just a one person
mm-hmm.
mechanism. It's a whole process. But as soon as we've rationale that we need to go, we're sending that.
Yeah.
Dispatch picking that up. They're allocating officers. You've got inspectors looking at that incident. You've got duty sergeants looking at that incident. Supervisors are looking at that incident.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many people involved in each process for the hundreds of jobs that we go through within a day to support that risk assessment. They're not making that for us. It's, you know, it's our rationale. It's our understanding of the risk, etc. And doing numerous checks to support our decision making. But we're not alone. There's lots of support there.
Yeah. So you talk about speaking to people who are quite often in a state of distress.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're calling the police, they need help.
Yeah.
Do you ever find that it's a challenge to get the information that you need from them, and how do you tackle that?
Absolutely. So sometimes you just can't get that information, you know, if someone's in such a panic that they can't elaborate on what's happening. Then you've got to sort of listen, use your active listening skills, but listening to background noise, what can I hear going on? Tend to find that a few one-liners on an incident, sending that up to dispatch, they're aware that something's going on that we need to be aware of. But at this point, they can't really send officers because we don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
By listening to the background noise, if the caller's stopped engaging with us, but we can hear background noise, we can hear shouting, we can hear things moving around. Whilst you can't see physical, you know, you can't hear physical violence, you can hear people
mm-hmm.
moving around and there could be a tussle and something going on where they aren't able to speak anymore. The line's still open. And it's just a rationale that on the instant, you know, I would say, for instance, no longer engaging with me. However, this is what I can hear in the background. That's given someone upstairs the impetus to think we need to be going to this.
Yeah.
You know, there's still a risk here and the risk is high. I think it's sort of like reading through, understanding the environment that person's in. You know, even sometimes if it's, let's say it's something on the road, you can hear road noise. This sounds like it might be in a car, you know, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. You can pick up them sounds in the background, which might indicate the environment they're in.
Yeah.
And that's supporting our risk assessment.
Yeah. So with those distressing calls, do you ever find that you go home and you kind of, it's difficult to tune out from them, or it's difficult to switch off and stop thinking about it?
Honestly, for me, no. I think it's really important that we switch off from it.
Mm-hmm.
In that moment, I would say you have to like park your emotions.
Yeah.
Once we take that 999 call, no matter the situation, even if it's something you've experienced in your own life, which happens, we're all human, you just have to literally switch off from that. You have to park your emotions. You can deal with them at another time. In this moment, we've got to be fully focused on that caller. And that's what we have to do. That is what has to happen. Because there's bits of information there that we don't want to miss. It could be a crucial piece of information. My main sort of like assessment when I want to call someone, if it's, you know, domestic in progress, violence in progress, is for that person to get themselves out of that situation. You know, we're instructing you to get out of that situation, lock yourself in a room, get in your car, drive away, get out of the property, anything, put a physical barrier between yourself and the thing that's causing you harm. Doesn't mean anything changes. It just means we can now have a conversation where you're not in that immediate risk anymore.
Yeah.
I know some humans, we're adrenaline filled and we're drawn to the danger, but from a policing point of view, we want you out of that danger mm-hmm. and then we can come and assist you. If you remain in that danger, that makes everyone's job harder and also puts you at tremendous risk of actually something more detrimental happening. But yeah, it's just about kind of building the rapport in 999 calls, but also for the caller and the call handler to instruct that person. When you're panicking, you're not listening to people in general. Mm-hmm. You're panicking, you're focusing on your panic. But someone just telling you, get out of there, move.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can do the basics. If they try to give you like War and Peace, then you're just going to probably put the phone down. It's too much information. It's just got to be succinct and just the basics. Lock the door, you know? Yeah. Really, it sounds like simple things. But as I said, in that moment of sheer panic for people, it's just overload. When I leave work, I don't watch the news. I don't really know what's going on in local media and anything like that. I just completely switch off from it. I think it's really important.
So another call that came through was the mother of a 12-year-old girl who had gone missing from home, and the mother was understandably quite distressed. How did you handle that call? There must have been a lot of things going through your mind that you needed to...
Yeah, to be honest with her, she could have been more distressed. She was quite on it, actually. A lot of people will call up for people missing, and they've done no checks. They've not checked like local vicinity, not checked hospitals. I remember that one quite well. She had already sort of checked in with friends where she thought her daughter might be, and she was on her way to be looking in them locations. For us, that was quite a high grading because she was 12. It was the afternoon, but she'd been gone missing a significant amount of time. She'd left home. So from that, with missing people, the information that we need from the caller is quite a lot. So when people report their friends missing, we need to know quite a lot of detail. It's absolutely fine if you want to report your friend missing. If you've got a lot of detail, great. If you haven't, it's probably best if a family member calls. There's no right or wrong, but we really need someone to be able to describe that person, what they're wearing. If they don't know what they're wearing habitually, what do they wear? Do they wear joggers? Do they wear jeans?
Yeah.
Because we're going to have officers going out looking straight away for people that match that. They're also going to be checking door to door. They'll be going to go to people's properties. Have you seen this person? And especially when they're of quite a significantly low age, this person's quite a young child. So we really need a lot of information in relation to that. But it's also pushing back to the caller as well. What other checks have they done? The other thing with missing people is we need to ascertain is what was their mood? Straight away, she was saying her daughter had mental health issues. She's been previously suicidal. That's a terrifying thing to think of in any case. But as a 12-year-old child going through that, that's like, you know, whoa. So again, that's that more impetus of what we need to do and how quickly we need to go and do it. I looked on the previous history for that. So we've got lots of systems that we use to go through previous histories, previous incidents, interactions with the police. And she was known to us. So again, that drives the dispatchers on to think this needs some more time and care for us to go and assist and deal with it.
Yeah. So you went from that call pretty much straight away into another call where someone was calling. There was a lot of commotion happening. They were very distressed and they were saying that they'd just been assaulted. How did your demeanour change going from that call to the next?
I mean, in terms of that one specifically, like, we've got a missing person, obviously, which is a big concern, but the mother was very engaging with me. So the person speaking to me was engaging fully, answering all my questions. We went into the assault where it was completely the opposite. Mm-hmm. All I was really hearing is someone's been assaulted, they've been hit in the face, there potentially might be a gun involved, we're not sure.
Yeah.
There's a domestic incident going on because the suspect is the brother-in-law. So there's a lot of different things going on, but at the same time, this person wasn't really actively engaging with me. So you have to constantly try and get them to re-engage with you. If that's not happening, it's just got to be one of them notes on the system, say, we're not getting any engagement here. But at the same time, we've now mentioned a gun, and now dispatch and the inspector, G inspectors, concern for the officer's safety? Do we need to send firearms out? Do we need to send a different type of police officer out to deal with this threat? Obviously, we don't want to put officers aren't invincible, unfortunately. They're not bulletproof. So we've got to ensure the safety of our colleagues and staff at the same time as ensuring the safety of the victim as well.
So,
that was a challenge, more challenging call. But they do happen. It happens quite
change
a lot.
Change of pace,
it,
for sure.
Yeah, it happens quite a lot.
Yeah.
But like I say, I think in the moment, I'm probably seem quite calm and collected, even though trying to get information. And after the call, you just have that downtime.
Yeah.
Even if it's 20 seconds, you just need that downtime to just, that was it, move on. Next
definitely.
One.
Yeah. So finally, what are some things that you do as a call handler that might surprise the public? They might not know that you do.
I think the main thing that, not surprised, but I don't think they would understand necessarily is the volume of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
So I would, for me personally, when I'm calling up the phone company or mobile phone companies, I'd rather report online. I would rather do it via web chat. If I don't have to call someone, I'm happy. That's
me too.
Maybe it's a generational thing, I don't know, but I would prefer not to have to call someone or spend hours on the phone getting frustrated for them to close at 5 p.m. and cut me off. Just enrages me. So with a lot of the stuff that can be reported to the police, it can be reported online. The period we're in now with sort of technology is amazing. We've got web chat. For us, that's pretty much 24/7. There's a lot of questions that can be answered on there.
Yep.
We also have online crime reports. We have online contact us forms. You can do subject access requests. So if you've got information you want to know about yourself, freedom of information, the same, stats about the police, that's all on the website. It's really quite easy to use. Most forms take between 5 and 15 minutes to fill out.
Yep.
Once they've reported that online and filled it in with their email address, they'll get an online reference number straight away. That'll go through to their emails. Usually goes in the junk. So you do have to tell people that because they think, oh, I was meant to get a report number, didn't get any. And it's usually in the junk, but they will get that reference straight away. That is us triaging that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no different to you speaking on the phone. I appreciate lots of people want to speak on the phone. That's absolutely fine. But there are waiting times. It's not as quick as doing it online by yourself. But neither method is dealt with in a different way. If we need to speak to you, we're going to call you.
We're
going to still have that engagement. I know using technology, sometimes you think, oh, it's just a robot. Web chat, it's a human. We're all humans. Mm-hmm. It's not a robot.
Yeah.
So all of the information we're asking you is the same. We're still call handlers. When we're taking 999 calls or switchboard calls, if we're fully dedicated, then we will be raising crimes, online crime reports in the downtime.
Mm-hmm.
So there is some downtime, but few and far between. There's always something to do. It's the world we live in, I guess. They just don't really have that switch off time until you get home. So really, really busy environment. And there'll always be questions we don't know the answer to, but there'll be someone somewhere that does know the answer.
Thank you for listening to CAMS Corps Our Stories. If you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our YouTube channel, where you can find new episodes and previous series. To keep up to date with the Force's latest news, follow us at CAMS Corps on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram.